Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
Disclaimer: the views and opinions you hear on this show are not the opinions of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Disclaimer: the views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Please enjoy the show.
So, tell me about your problems. Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
And when I get excited, my little disclaimer, she says, oh baby, the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
Hell yeah!
We'll have a gay old time!
Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. Justin's here.
Hey, everyone.
So we're doing a little first segment here before we get to this week's interview, because this is technically, technically there are more episodes than than 200 because of the holiday specials and stuff like that. But this is the 200th episode of the podcast. In terms of numbered order, this is number 200, and it's been 5 years. Almost to the day removed by about a month. We did our first episode on August 14th, 2009, and so we just wanted to acknowledge it here at the top of the show. So it's been 5 years and 200 and some episodes. What do you think?
I believe it's been 5 years, but I guess it is 5 years since we started this right after I moved here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
So yeah. It's one of those things where it's just like this constant in your life, more or less, and you're just like, oh yeah, wow, it has been 5 years, holy crap.
Well, yeah, and we went back and listened to the very first episode of this, thinking it was going to be dramatically different. And
super cringy, but...
Yeah, but it really wasn't that different.
Not at all, really. I mean, we were a little more on, but that was pretty much the only difference.
Yeah, and in those days, the first five episodes were taped at the LA location for NYAV Post, and we were in this little booth,
little sweaty booth.
Yeah, little chairs and some nice microphones, and we were effectively had an audience because the engineers were sitting there, and we were sort of. Taping the show that way, and it was really kind of weird and awkward. And then as time went on, we eventually started taping it in your apartment, and then we eventually moved over to Skype, but that was only after we were pretty comfortable with the way the show was going.
Right. We tried to tape in your apartment, but Bunny.
Yeah, but you're allergic to rabbits, and I had a pet rabbit. She passed away, and now I have a new pet rabbit, so never happened.
I couldn't really keep pausing the show to run out and wait for my esophagus to reopen.
Right.
A trachea, rather.
What a terrible allergy to have.
Oh my god, it's the worst. That and coffee.
You can't pet a bunny. You're allergic to coffee?
Yeah, I get, like, I can drink it, but I get a giant welt on my back every time.
That's bizarre.
It is awful.
It's horrible.
It took me like 20 years to figure that out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, well, you know, you're always drinking coffee, and right. It's just like, why would you link those two things?
Well,
yeah. Yeah, so, like, process of elimination, years, it took me, you know, yeah. Anyway, it's awful. I really, really miss coffee, and I really, really miss bunnies, and if I could, I would, you know, that would be how I commit suicide someday, is by just diving into a vat of bunnies.
Oh. Well, so then we just started doing it over Skype, and that's worked out for us in the intervening years. And I was wondering if you had any, like, particular favorite episodes. I mean, there are some obvious ones that have been brought up a lot, like the Carl Masek episode and the Chad Keim episode, you know, the one where basically he ran through the history of Genion and specifically the end of Genion. And those were good episodes. Those were all in our first year.
Right. Obviously, the Jake Adelstein interview, I'm a big fan of.
Right. That one turned out really well.
Well, he was just so much fun to talk to.
Yeah. And we would love more guests like that. You know, people who are sort of, they're at an intersection where they're relevant to the show, but it's not just anime
geekiness.
Yeah, it's not just anime nerd stuff, which is fine. I mean, that's our bread and butter. We love it. But something that's more intersectional, where it gives us a chance to branch out, is always nice. It's always fun. But there's very few people like that out there.
It's true.
That was a good one.
Who else is fun? I love talking to Helen McCarthy.
Yeah, that was great. We're gonna have her on again pretty soon, I think. Over the years, I would say, like, you know, one of the biggest lessons we learned is that we needed to have repeatable content, so that's where the Super Nerds came in, and early on we tried it with the Viewers Like You stuff that eventually faded into just Twitter question shows, which generally those happen when we have a week where it's like, well, I don't have a guest, and there's not much else to talk about, so let's just take some questions, and we always have a good time with those. And, yeah, I mean, the show has sort of evolved into what it is now, which is kind of a... you know, we do it just for the love of it. We've managed to maintain an audience, and it's worked out pretty well so far. So we'll do it for the foreseeable future. I just, you know, I don't think we'll ever come up with event shows quite like those Revenge of the Decade things ever again.
I'm fine with that. Those are really, really, really hard to record.
They were. I think it's some of our best work, but...
It is, but they were four-hour marathon sessions. I mean, I was getting hungry and...
Yeah,
and
yeah, totally.
Like, you're exhausted after one of those. You just want to take a nap.
Yep, yeah, they were like four-hour records or something like that. And but they, you know, those worked out really, really well. We want to do, like, a 70s show at some point, but that would be more educational. That would be, like, having people on to explain what these shows are and where to find them, rather than just sort of, like, talking about stuff everybody knows, you know? Like, a 70s show requires experts that would be able to educate. And so we want to do that at some point. We still have a short list of guests that we'd love to have on the show. And, of course, we're looking into doing more Japanese guests now that we know we can.
Under very specific circumstances.
Under very specific circumstances, yeah. So recently we just did our first episode of the show with a Japanese guest, or Japanese guests, plural, rather. And that worked out really well, but that was a special case where the translator for it was one of the guests and was also, like, BFFs with the other two guys who were on the show, which is a translator-to-subject situation that basically never happens. So it worked out really well, and the conversation flowed really well, but the odds that we'll ever have that again are low. But that doesn't mean we're not willing to try with just a standard translator and subject sort of interview. So we'll definitely be giving that a shot. Other than that, yeah, I mean, you know, thanks for sticking around for 200 episodes, and Justin, thanks for sticking around for 200 episodes, I guess.
Well, I wasn't here for 200 episodes, let's be fair here.
Yeah, you're probably in, like, 170 of them.
Okay, I'll take that. And I will continue to keep coming by when I can. I won't be able to always, but either due to conflict of interest or just not having anything to contribute to some aspects of things, but
well,
I love doing the show.
I mean, well, that's great. I mean, your role has changed so dramatically in the last 5 years. Like, things have changed a lot for you. And
yeah, that's true.
And a lot of that really impacted your ability to do what you were doing in the earliest days of the show, which was straight up co-host stuff. But I mean, we just did an episode where you were the guest because that's how much your role has changed. So, I mean, you know, that's okay. That's positive change in your life. And the show, I don't think, has necessarily suffered for it. I'm happy with the way things are going, and really can't thank the audience enough for continuing to show up. We love doing this, and we'll keep doing it as long as it's fun and there's something to talk about. So, cool. All right, let's get to this interview. And we're back. Our guest this week, happy to have him back on the show, returning champion, editor-in-chief over at FandomPost.com. It's Chris Beveridge. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going. Thanks for coming back. It's been a little while since we've talked to you.
Oh, yeah. Always enjoy talking with you, though.
So how's it going? It's been a couple years at this point. Phantom Post obviously still trucking along. How are things going over there?
It's been about 3.5 years since we left the previous place and started up in 2011. And basically, you know, every year something new, continually growing and doing new things. So it's been generally positive all around. I can't really complain about it.
Do you still consider your... Because I know, like, Phantom Post, you guys cover everything sort of genre-related. Basically, stuff nerds like. Which, you know, that's a lot of sites now. But, I mean, you know, coming from just doing anime, and now you're basically covering everything. And is this a wrong characterization, though? Like, maybe you're doing a little bit more of the broader material at this point? Like, the mainstream nerd stuff?
No, realistically, when people ask, I say I do, like, 90% anime and like 10% other things, and it's kind of just a what interests me aspect. It's not like we're trying to cover everything, because that's bloody well impossible for, like, you know, one main person to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you look at the news page, there are days where it's primarily just anime and there's nothing else. Some days, you know, like you get Comic-Con, it's going to be not as much anime. But yeah, 90% of it's probably still just the anime and manga side.
Right, right. And that's it. So really it's just dictated by whatever you're interested in.
Yeah, and, you know, the news of the day.
Right, of course. Well, that's cool. So, I mean, so is that still where your interests lie? Like, would you characterize your own tastes as being 90% anime, 10% other stuff?
No, it's a huge mishmash of everything. There's just more anime to talk about, since that's the primary focus.
Right.
I mean, it's what I've been doing since 98, so.
Yeah. Of course, right.
it's one of those things of, like, you know, you want to be able to talk about more than just that sometimes.
Of course. Oh, yeah. Well, I know that. Yeah.
So if I got stuck in that rut, that's where I was up until I ended up at Mania. I was doing anime constantly and I didn't have an outlet for anything else.
Right.
So doing this kind of eases the pressure a little bit.
Have you noticed any, like, traffic patterns, like, in terms of, like, what people gravitate towards? I mean, obviously, you're seen as somebody people go to for anime content. Like, that is your reputation, that's what your career is built on. So obviously that's the majority of your audience, but have you noticed, like, if you look at, like, you know, your numbers, do people show up for the other material, or is it, like, what would you say your audience is at with that stuff?
It's still pretty much the majority of the anime side, and there's really not a lot of crossover in that crowd.
Really?
Which has always been kind of disappointing. I always felt like the odd man out. And that I liked more than just anime. You get a lot of anime fans that are all, that's it. They don't want to talk about anything else. The interesting thing that works with the other stuff is that it's more accessible with the audience in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can deal with the creators directly. And they share the stuff more.
Yeah, that's definitely
if that makes sense. Like, we do the comic book reviews or movie stuff or things like Warner Brothers, and they'll share that. And then it's a little more easy to communicate with them, and they draw more people into it. Right. And then you get them coming in going, oh, well, what's this other stuff you're doing?
Right.
So it's kind of just cross-pollinate both a little bit.
Huh. So you see it sort of going from – you see sort of people going from mainstream to getting sort of interested in anime, but not the other way.
Yeah, very little the other way. There's, you know, some people that are going to be like that, which is always great because they want to talk about more than just the one thing, or they see the connections between the two.
Right.
But it's more a thing of being able to talk about other stuff, engage with the creators directly, which is very hard for at least someone like me to do with, like, the manga side.
Right.
and manga creators are very private in general.
Uh-huh. Well, they're busy.
So, and busy, and, you know, they're working what they do. The comic creators, it's so different for them, or movie studios and producers and actors and whatnot. They're a lot more engaged over here in social media in a way.
Right.
Now, never mind the language barrier.
Yeah, yeah, that's the other hurdle.
So it's a nice different engagement thing, and those fans that come in, they end up bringing, you know, a small different sensibility to things. And I do see some of them swinging over to the anime side, since it's so much more accessible to them now, too.
Right, yeah. We're in sort of a good period right now for sort of at least somewhat mainstream accessibility to this stuff, because there's a couple of hit shows and they're on TV, and yep. You know, that's all it really takes, you know. Although you know, that is the first time that's happened in a decade, so.
Yeah, but there's also the thing of the accessibility's there when you boot up most any TV now. You've got Hulu and Netflix, and it's all on there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So they see the stuff in front of them. Now they, you know, I get somebody that's coming to read like my Arrow or Gotham reviews or something, or Falling Skies. They see an anime show, they like Attack on Titan. They see it when they load it into Netflix. They're like, ah, I know about this place. It talks about it now.
Right.
So then they kind of cycle around and start checking it out.
Yeah, it stands to reason. I mean, we've found that, you know, the they just want to talk about anime, which is fine, of course.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But, the other thing that they will engage with on that level is video games. And obviously you don't need another thing to go into.
That's a scary one to get into.
No kidding, yeah.
Yeah, there's like light dabbling on a couple of games here and there, but that's the extent of that at the moment.
Yeah. Maybe not something you need added to your pile at this point.
Yeah, not my pile. If I get somebody else, that's a different thing. But my pile?
So you're still a one-man show, right? I mean, it's just you? Like, you don't have any kind of staff or anything?
Yeah, I'm the only one that does. I do all the news, the majority of the reviews. But I've got like 25 people that do other reviews, you know, some simulcast manga, DVD stuff.
Right. And those are volunteers, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. But I meant like in terms of like, so you don't have like an ad sales guy.
No, I am the guy for everything.
Okay. That's what I meant. Yeah.
It's a good experience, but I do it all.
Yeah. So I don't think we've necessarily touched on this before. How in the world do you find the time to run the site, consume everything that you need to consume? I mean, that you're legendary in terms of like just sheer consumption, and you have two kids,
yep,
and a house to upkeep and a life.
Yeah,
presumably
it's easy. I do actually. I get out plenty. I do things.
Right, right. Of course. How do you find time? Like, do you sleep? It seems impossible.
No, I mean, it's just one of the things I did. I had one of the jobs I had years ago involved data management back, you know, before it was really data management. And I learned how to compartmentalize and do what I need to do. And I basically work from like a 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. kind of routine. Yeah. You know, I take breaks during the day and everything and treadmill time. Cause you see my steps and, you know, it just all through the day. That's what I focus on. You know, kids are off doing their stuff. I do my stuff. And there's enough of it that actually gets shared with them, so it's kind of like an involved thing.
Oh, right. Yeah, so you figured out sort of a way to combine them at least a little bit.
Oh, yeah, it's the classic thing of if you love it, it's not really a job.
Sure.
That's what I tell myself.
Some days more than others.
Exactly.
That's always depending on the day. So, I mean, is it just a time management thing? Like, do you have, like, a pretty regimented schedule? Like, okay, here to here I'm doing this, here to here I'm doing this?
Yeah, for the most part I do. You know, a certain part of the day is just, you know, skimming all the feeds and the news and gathering what I'm going to write about.
Right.
You know, the first hour and a half of the day, I'm on the treadmill watching DVDs and Blu-rays.
Right.
You know, other parts of the day I'm mixing it up with this and that, simulcast writing, scheduling, ad sales, you know, billing the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
And then, you know, kids get home from school, it's off to this. That's why I hate the summer when they're home. I can't handle it.
That messes your whole schedule up.
Once they're in school, it's golden.
Of course. So in terms of, we mentioned consumption. I wanted to know what you had been watching lately that really caught your attention, or, you know, something you had heavily recommend, because you do have a whole lot of contributors on the site. You don't necessarily write as many reviews as you used to, I don't think.
It varies a little bit. I haven't been doing as many simulcast reviews.
Yeah, it's hard to keep up with those.
That's where I had to pull back. Well, I get into the problem of I'm watching stuff twice.
Right. Oh, right, yeah.
And who has time for that anymore?
Especially not you. Yeah, that's...
No.
Yeah, of course. You're watching some things twice. I mean, at this point, like, everything gets simulcast, but not everything gets a physical release. So,
right.
You know.
Yeah, it's always going to be like the ones I enjoy are the ones that came out years ago that I used to watch in different formats.
Right.
And revisiting them in full season sets now. But even some of the simulcasts are the same way. Rewatching them from weekly to, you know, a one day setting,
right,
changes the tone of how a show can be interpreted.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of different shows where, like, the audience responds differently depending on how they consumed it.
Yeah.
I find that, like, one of the biggest examples of that is Attack on Titan. Like, people who watched it week to week complained about the pacing, and then people who watched it in big chunks on Netflix or on DVD didn't complain about the pacing.
Right. You sit there and you just soak it up. You don't stop.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the binge watching Netflix stuff.
But in terms of anime, I mean, like, have you seen anything lately that you would, like, strongly recommend or, like, really think people should check out?
Well, you know, I just finished, speaking of it, you know, the second half of Attack on Titan.
Right.
And Watamote was really fun recently.
Was it fun?
One I hadn't seen was Gatchaman Crowds.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw that for the first time and really got into that.
Yeah, we've got a review of that going up at some point in the near future, I think. But, Sentai's got, like, a couple of really strong shows out right now. It's,
yeah. And Devil was a part-timer. That was probably one of the best things I've seen in the last few months.
Right.
That just hit the right sweet spot for, like, humor, animation, style of it, the tone. It was just one of those, oh, this is great. Why didn't I watch this when it was being simulcast?
Right. Well, because you knew eventually you'd have to see it on Blu-ray. Yeah, that's cool. Well, those are all, I mean, those are great. All that stuff is generally, like, pretty well received. And anything that you think is sort of being ignored or not getting enough attention that you think people definitely should take a look at?
Nothing that crosses my mind. I've always been a little out of sync on that because I watch everything. I don't really pay attention to what's popular. Being popular or not.
Okay.
Because I know most of it comes across my desk.
Right, so you sort of have, it's just sort of like, all right, what's next?
Yeah.
And you're not really...
Yeah, I mean, it's all enjoy, but it's also the job aspect of it.
Right. Aside from anime, like, you do review plenty of television and films and stuff like that. Is there... I mean, we're in a drought right now. Like, right now is kind of the bad part of the year for entertainment because there's nothing to see in the movie theater, and the fall season on TV hasn't started yet, and the summer season's over, so you're just... You're in
this is my vacation.
Yeah, right.
This is where I get really confused. It's like the last week of the year after Christmas. I'm sitting around, I don't know what to watch. I have nothing going on. But it's wonderful and scary at the same time, because I always think, am I going to have anything to watch? Am I going to have a schedule to post and write and do?
Right.
The only thing that... I mean, you know, the summer season was good for TV. It was better than I thought it was going to be, which is nice because it used to be terrible. There used to be nothing.
Yeah, it's just reality shows. And...
But I've been enjoying The Strain a lot.
Oh, really? Okay.
That's been, like, the big thing for me this summer. Foolishly, I still watch Under the Dome. I hate myself for that. And I'm finishing out Extant just to see the end of it, to see where they're trying to go with it. And I'm glad I only have one more year of Falling Skies to watch.
Yeah, that one, everybody I know that watches that show, which is you and Bamboo.
Gluttons for Punishment.
Yeah, they sort of talk about it in this sort of abuse victim.
Yeah, right. Totally. It started off with a little bit of promise. We knew it wasn't going to go far, but now we're at the end. We're like, okay, one more season, we can do this.
Yeah.
But it opened the doors for a lot more stuff in summer, which was the nice thing.
Well, it seems like... It seems like summer's, you know, everything you just mentioned, and I know that's just sort of where your tastes lie, but it is, I think there's some truth to the fact that summer does seem to become kind of a testing ground for genre stuff on, at least on, like, network television. Like, that's where they'll put it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've been enjoying Legends. You know, it's good Sean Bean stuff. I foolishly like mistresses. You know, I watch a lot of different stuff.
Oh,
so okay. It's been nice having original stuff in the summer.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, with none of this, of course, applies to, like, pay cable where they'll just completely ignore the network schedules and run.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other beast of fun.
That's different. So I wanted to talk a little bit about your community. And if you had noticed any changes in it over the years, because we were talking about sort of your status as somebody where people go to you for anime content, and I would have characterized your crowd, your community, as fairly hardcore. Like, mm-hmm. They always struck me as being pretty hardcore guys. Is that still true? How would you characterize your community?
It's still largely true, especially when you talked about forums, mm-hmm. because... You know, as the internet's changed, forums aren't quite what they used to be, so it's a certain audience that likes that setting. You know, as you get more people that have shifted to just the social media side and doing their conversation there. So we've got, like, the hardcore side there, and some of them do, you know, Twitter and Facebook and whatnot. But it's the other areas, the Tumblr and so forth, that's where you see more of the not quite so hardcore, but more open to a lot of different things people.
Oh, interesting. So you think, like, forums have basically become the domain of the hardcore, like the old forum BBS style that we use that.
They've gone back to, like, the Rec Arts anime style. They're in that they're in that mind zone now, which is not a bad thing because they're full of knowledge, they have a lot of stuff, and it's a good sharing database.
Sure, yeah.
But if you just want to talk casual, it's something that's really gotten to the Twitter side where you can just blurt it out and engage with anybody.
Right, for better and worse, yeah.
For better and worse, yeah.
Right, yeah. Huh. So I wanted to talk a little bit before we do some Twitter questions here. You're one of these people that you know, I follow you on Twitter and on Facebook and you seem to in general partake of more genre entertainment than virtually anybody else I know.
okay.
And the reason I wanted to bring this up was, I feel like genre entertainment, as in terms of, like, what appeals to nerds, has not only become mainstream, but I feel like it's maybe changing a little bit. And as a guy who consumes all of this stuff and has opinions on all of it, I'm wondering how you feel about the current state of mainstream nerd entertainment. And are you happy with it? Do you wish there were what are you getting? What are you not getting that you wish you had? Do you feel like we're in a golden age? Like, what's your overall take right now?
In a lot of ways, depending on the genre, but for the most part, it is kind of a golden age. You know, there's certain areas that aren't, but my view of it has been that what we're getting now is more of what we used to have, but just in, like, print form. Genre entertainment on TV used to be very narrow, but now we're getting a wider range of types of shows that used to get, like, science fiction books, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think science fiction used to just be like, okay, it's a big Star Wars movie or something. But science fiction was, you know, Heinlein, Asimov, and all these other writers.
Right.
And different types of stories. Now we're seeing those types of stories being adapted more to TV. The area that's lost, which is unfortunate, is the non-planet-based stuff. You know, a Star Trek that's actually not on Earth. Things like, you know, things actually in space. But beyond that, in the genre terms, we're getting so much more variety that especially for comic book fans, it's just ridiculous how it is now. It's just a golden age of it.
Yeah, well, it helps that stuff is insanely profitable.
Well, yeah, that too. But, you know, they're treating it right. And the nice thing is that as they realize the method of treating that right, when they start going to the other areas of genre entertainment for, you know, novels and games or whatever else, they know they have to do it right there to make it work. Well, so it's self-replicating in different genres.
In your opinion, what are they getting right in terms of the comic book stuff? Like, when you, because I remember you telling us that you're an old school comics guy first.
Yep.
And that's really your area, like, that's sort of your roots. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, like, what about the comic book stuff that's coming out now, at least in terms of, like, the films, and I mean, the TV stuff is really in its infancy, I think, at this point. Like, they've announced all these crazy plans for, like, the Netflix Marvel stuff and, you know, things like that. Like, none of that's out yet. But in terms of the films and what's out there on TV, what are they getting right now that appeals to you as a comic book fan that makes you think, okay, they're doing this correctly?
Part of it is that they're treating it seriously. You know, when I was growing up, comic book shows, movies, or whatever was all treated as, you know, the Batman 66 stuff. You know, the Biff Powell stuff.
Right.
And, you know, we saw that with some of the films that were made in the 80s, you know, the old Fantastic Four, Captain America that never came out. What they're doing now is they're actually looking at the source material and realizing, you know, after some of them have won major literary awards, that there are serious stories to tell and obviously a whole lot of money to be made if they tell them right. So they're treating it in a way that says they have to be respectful of the property. Because when they do that, they get the fans behind it. But for the most part, it's just that they're actually – well, the Marvel stuff in particular, because that's the most expansive of all of it in the films, is that they're connecting it, which is, you know, previously really unheard of in any scale like this. I mean, Star Wars was the closest thing in a way. And they're just bringing in so much of it. You know, they have stuff that's off limits, but – who thought they'd do a Guardians of the Galaxy movie and all these other things? So they're taking chances and doing things that appeal to the comic book fans that thought we'd never get anything like that. So it kind of binds them more to it.
Right.
And really the same. I mean, the TV shows, like you said, are in their infancy. But we got like 6 or 7 comic book shows coming out this season.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy in how in-depth they're getting with it. And, you know, I mean, it used to be you'd have one of the shows, and they would have the main character, and they'd never admit to anything else ever happening that was related to comics. And now Arrow goes in, and it pulls things from every corner of the universe. You know, so it's just insane that they're doing things like that.
Right, and obviously, at least in terms of the films, I mean, the shows are obviously not being canceled. TV shows aren't being, like, canceled. Like, Arrow's on, what, the CW, right?
Yep.
So the bar for something being canceled on the CW is, like, really low.
It's low.
But that's still on the air. They do cancel things that don't, you know, and I'm sure that's not one of their cheaper shows to produce. So,
no.
You know, obviously it is a success, but the films in particular are finding, like, you're talking like, well, this is giving comics fans exactly what they want, but at the same time, obviously it's appealing to a much broader audience than comic book fans. And I'm curious what the secret is, like, what is the magic formula that suddenly made this stuff accessible? Because I read comics as a kid, like everyone else did, and the ins and outs and, oh, this character appeared in issue blah, blah, and there was a crossover here and there, and, like, here's a really obscure character from the 70s that only showed up in issues X, Y, and Z. Like, that's the level that they're referencing stuff at.
Right, but that's not their primary focus.
It's totally not. But I'm just, it's mystifying to me that stuff can, you know, like, Guardians of the Galaxy grossed $300 million domestic.
Yep.
Just in the U.S., like, that would have been respectable worldwide. well, maybe not respectable worldwide, but for a domestic gross, that's really good for a movie about basically B-string comic book characters.
If that.
So,
no, the change that happened in the way I view it is that prior to once you take out the Batman movies, because that's its own whole different thing.
Yeah.
When you look at what Marvel did in making their movies, they brought in the people that were growing up on the 80s comics. Anybody who tried to make the movies before, they grew up when it was all the 60s stuff. Mm-hmm. They grew up being exposed just to Batman 66 and, you know, the awful cartoons and the camp of it all.
Yeah.
The guys they've been bringing in since, both actors and production and creativity and direction, those are all people that grew up with it when it was going through the Alan Moore phase, you know, Watchmen and everything else. And it was saying, this is legitimate storytelling. So they grew up with a whole different set of stories, and that translates differently when your mindset comes from that as opposed to the goofy 60s stuff.
Right.
So they know how to adapt it into that, because when you have people coming in that had – I mean, most of the studios, if they were making something – the people making it didn't know anything about comic books, you know?
Right. And
so you
really
get people that are doing it, they're like, I don't care, it's just a project.
Yeah, and they didn't particularly respect the source material.
Oh, exactly.
Like, we're just making,
and that's part of the problem we run into with like the manga adaptions or anime adaptions in a live action. They haven't found those people that are going to adapt it in the right way yet. They're trying, but this is not happening.
Yeah, that we'll get to that in a second. Do you think that right now we're in a little bit of a? Do you think it's a bubble, or do you think this is sustainable over time?
It's definitely sustainable because we'll see in the next couple of years as more of the projects come out. But with them being so different coming up, they're breaking away from the mold a bit. So they're staying to the style, but they're not relying on like another Iron Man movie to carry it all. So
that's
the thing there.
But surely, like that, like Iron Man in particular, is a result of negotiations between Robert Downey Jr. and Disney at this point. I mean, they would love to have another Iron Man. There would probably be six of those if they could do that.
Based on what I've been reading with them, though, I don't think that's really their thing, because they've got their roadmap, which is really forward-thinking for a company when dealing with the millions that they're working on. But when they've mapped out stuff and they don't have anything else like that, I mean, it's really, other than the Avengers movies, if the second one does anywhere near as good as the first, most of what they're focusing on are not a top-tier property. Not that Iron Man was a top-tier property when it came out.
Well, I think it is now.
Well, it is now, but in 2008,
it wasn't.
Nobody knew who Iron Man was. So, I mean, they got stuff coming up, Ant-Man, Doctor Strange, Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, all these things are not named properties. But they're seeding all of it with, like, the Netflix shows, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and so forth. So it's a different kind of growth potential for it.
Yeah, I wish they would stop firing interesting directors.
It's only happened twice.
Yeah, but twice is enough for a trend. And my concern is that, because you and I are different on this stuff, I want to see them. I want to see the director's thumbprint. I want to feel like I'm watching a film, not a product, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the Marvel stuff, as much as I'm entertained by it, it's as close to product.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Yeah, so I kind of want to see a little bit more of the artist in there, and they're really taking the artist out of a lot of these things. Like, the fact that Edgar Wright walked from Ant-Man told me pretty much what I needed to know about the way that they're managing that studio.
Right.
And
part of what I'm hoping is that when the DC stuff starts coming up more and they're doing things that aren't connected, it's going to push Marvel a little more to do some stuff, which is what we're seeing, I think, some of them. Right. If they do Doctor Strange with Joaquin Phoenix in the lead, that's not going to be a traditional movie.
I hope not.
So there's potential for that. But, if DC's doing, like, Sandman and a standalone Shazam film, these kinds of things, that can shake up the dynamic a little bit.
Yeah.
But, from someone like me who grew up in the 80s, and, it's just like with Transformers. I had all those toys in the 80s. And, you're ostracized for being into it. Now all my friends have to go and see these movies because their kids are into it.
Right.
So I'm not going to complain about the state of things at the moment.
Yeah, well, plus there's sort of a cultural expectation that if you're keeping up with things, then you generally watch those movies, right?
So, yeah.
I finally said, I'm done with this, and didn't watch the latest Transformers movie. Because I said, wait, I hate these. Why am I giving them money? But culturally, if you're keeping up, then there's the expectation that you will have seen those films. So it's not necessarily like, oh, this is for kids, or I don't want to go. Like, that's mainstream entertainment now.
For some of us, that's huge.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Because it's legitimized stuff that you were saying, 20 years ago, and saying, you got to read Sandman. This is awesome. And you look, it's a comic book. It's like it won awards, And they're like, eh. But now it's a little more serious.
Well, you bring up the taking it seriously thing as like sort of pivotal. And I think you're right to an extent. But I think half the appeal of the Marvel stuff is that it's fun to watch.
Oh, exactly.
The DC stuff is, I've found it's not, I don't think it's fun to watch at all. Like, their movies are, and they said specifically, like, we are going to be completely humorless for all of these movies, like, no jokes.
I think that was actually debunked, but no, for the most part,
okay.
It's only been the Batman films we've really had.
Man of Steel was...
Man of Steel, that's
joke
them finding their way. I want to give them some room to grow on, but I actually enjoyed the movie.
Well, but
I enjoyed Green Lantern, so okay. What do I know?
But Green Lantern had jokes in it. Like, Man of yes. Steel and the Batman films are oppressively serious and dark and gritty and grim, and that seems to be like, oh, they've decided this is how to make money, so they're going to go down that road. I don't think it's going to be as successful as what Marvel is doing, and I think those the Marvel stuff at least has more of a family-friendly, maybe.
Yeah, but see, then we come back to your point about it being a product.
Right, yeah, I guess so.
So if they're doing something, if they're not mimicking Marvel, they're doing their own thing, that's something to give them credit for, too. Even if it's not, this, you know, there's no humor.
Right, even if it's a, you know, grimdark slog through angst and wailing, yeah.
It's nice to have a little variety.
You're absolutely right. So do you think this will ever, to the point, do you think what's happening now with Marvel stuff and the DC, the comic book stuff entering the mainstream or having thoroughly entered the mainstream in terms of what Americans consume for entertainment on a massive scale, do you think that would ever happen with anime and manga in terms of being adapted for an American audience? I don't mean like, gosh, will Naruto ever be as popular as Marvel Comics? No, but if it were to be adapted into, like, a big movie or something, do you think there's even a way to do it or not?
Yeah, I always look at it's there's such different beasts in how it's done, you know? But we're seeing a lot of, like, independent comics coming up and being made, but anime and manga, they just have their own tone to it. That and you know the ones that really work tend to be the really cultural shows, so they're harder to do in some ways.
Right.
You know, the only one that I've even thought that could work well and was Attack on Titan, and that's only because of the trailers that I was seeing for Maze Runner.
Oh, right.
Because you see that and you're like, well, holy crap, they should make Titan now.
Right.
You know, it's just the scale they do it. But there's very little that I mean I watch a lot of anime, but it's either schoolgirl dramas. Or shows that are just impossible to really make because they're so culturally tied in an odd way that they don't translate well to a live-action form. You know, you would think Gundam would be the big one to do, and we've always wanted that in a sense. But it just doesn't translate well.
Well, and, you know, I think it boils down to just a storytelling sensibility. Like, you know, you said Gundam, and I thought for a moment, like, well, that could, no.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the story's really, it's really, really drawn out. Half the drama in Gundam is, because the story takes a long time to tell, and you spend a lot of time getting to know these characters, and when they eventually confront each other, there's all this backstory that goes into it. Like,
yep.
It's a very different storytelling style. So condensing that down into just a 2.5-hour movie that, you know, hits all the right emotional beats, connects with the audience, and tells a really solid, well-told story, probably not really all that possible. I mean, you know, even
it would have to be like a Battlestar Galactica type story.
Yeah.
It would have
yeah.
to be done in that format. And that's the thing that gets me when you look at a lot of anime. Outside of Ghibli, there's not a lot in the movie world that you could port. And that's where a lot of this really comes from.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Hollywood's not going to look at a TV series or a manga from there for the most part, you know, outside of like a Death Note or some horror films. They're not going to look at that for source material. They're going to look at whatever theatrical shows are out there, how they can adapt that over.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, anyone trying to build a franchise probably wouldn't want to do it on the back of something that they don't own outright.
Exactly.
You know, hence why, so now, you know, Disney just straight up owns Marvel, and they own all those characters, so, you know.
Between that and Lucasfilm, they don't need anything else.
Right, exactly, yeah, so they, you know, it's kind of like how, you know, Cartoon Network stopped showing as much anime because they realized, you know, if we own the IP on these shows, we can make a ton of money on merchandising. You know, so a Hollywood studio isn't necessarily going to look at like a, you know, oh, we're going to make 3 Death Note movies. Now, you know, they might make one just to, you know, get the profit out of it, but they're not going to do this big, huge marketing push and attempt to build a franchise out of something maybe they don't own outright.
Exactly.
I don't know. It's an interesting conundrum, but I think maybe it does just ultimately boil down to that storytelling thing. Anime storytelling is fundamentally really different from Hollywood storytelling.
And, exactly.
You know, maybe it can't happen. I don't know.
You can always hope. That's at least for one or two. There's some stuff that they should do, though.
Well, personally, I think Speed Racer was underappreciated.
Oh, that was an awesome movie.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Whenever anyone's like, they've never made a good adaptation, I'm like, no, there's Speed Racer.
right here.
It's fine. It's exactly what it intended to be.
Yep.
All right, so we got some Twitter questions here. From Shazari, he asks, are light novel adaptations oversaturating the anime market? Well, there's a lot of them.
But there's not a lot coming out yet, and it's kind of staggered. And they're generally fairly different, so I don't see them really saturating anything yet.
It seems like the big otaku shows, the ones that they love the most, are generally seem to be light novel shows now.
Yeah. That's what's being mined for material.
Right, yeah. Well, a lot of those light novels, that's the market they're targeting in the first place. So,
yeah.
You know, a young adult audience, late high school, early college.
Mm-hmm. I'm just glad to have the light novels coming out again.
What do you mean, in English?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to read the source. I don't know, like, the stuff that they're releasing, like, it's like, oh boy, the light novel, it's like, here's what the second half of Sword Art Online is based on. I'm like, nope. No thanks.
I just want my Crest of the Stars novels. That's all I want.
Oh yeah, good luck with that, isn't it?
Or 12 Kingdoms. Bring those back for me.
12 Kingdoms would be nice. They published like one or two of those, or one of them?
I think one of them, and then like two of the 12 Kingdoms ones.
Yeah, something like that.
Too soon, that was all. Too soon and too wrong.
Yeah, they were ahead of their time.
In a way.
Yeah, sort of.
Ahead of their time, but in the wrong lane.
The Merzamers, I don't know how to say this name, asks, seems that many anime creators publicly regret the mostly otaku market. Will we soon see any attempts to reach a different audience? I feel like maybe this is a mischaracterization. I don't think that anime creators, by and large, resent or regret the otaku market. After all, it keeps them in business. I think the ones that like talking to Western press maybe are more willing to be open about that, and especially people like... So he might be thinking, like, the guy who... The creative team behind Under the Dog, which we interviewed for this show and then have been interviewed in other places, and they did, like, a Reddit AMA and stuff like that. They were very open about the otaku market. You know, it's really small, and we got to stop pandering just to them. And... you occasionally see that from creators who are specifically working on shows that are aimed at more of a Western audience, or shows that are not specifically aimed at the otaku, the 2000 otaku that buy Blu-rays.
All right.
I think you see a lot of that from those people, but they're also way more likely to talk to Western press, and there's not that many of them. Just a few.
But they're vocal.
Yeah, those are just the comments that you remember. You do, every season, you see stuff that... Every season... There's at least one or two shows that are not aimed at the otaku market. And
yeah.
I say be happy with that.
That's all we can hope for at this point.
Right, yeah.
Now, it's one of the things if you're just waiting for the market there to change, because we can't change it, really.
Right, and you know, among the stuff that's targeted at them, you might actually find a couple in there that you like anyway, so... You know.
Yeah. I mean, they're kind of in the same place that the comic market's in, where it's mostly just 20 to 30-year-old men that are buying. Although we have more women buying now, more interested in things, so it's expanding from there. Mm-hmm. But it feels like the anime manga stuff, well, not so much the manga, but the anime side is in that same kind of rut. Because the only people really buying are those, that audience.
Right, and that's a really good comparison, because you see the exact same kind of sky is falling arguments for both. Yep. Like, they're the exact same argument. Like, only this one little audience is buying this. This is a dead industry. It's going to fail any moment now. And it doesn't, of course. But what they're basically trying to say is there's not diverse enough content, which I don't think anyone would argue.
No, because there needs to be more diversity and stuff. You know, I mean, this coming season, I'm excited because there's a show about a married couple. How often do we get that? You know, most shows are the will they or won't they kind of thing if they have relationship stuff at all now, because even that's dwindled heavily.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, here, you'll like this one. Invalid Name asks, You're one of the few mainstream sites that reviews hentai. What's the state of that genre slash industry?
See, in Japan, I think it's fairly healthy. They keep churning a lot of stuff out, and there's tons of it. Here, the manga side is actually really nice for once. Project H brings out so much stuff. And what's actually fun about it is that it's not the stuff that we had, you know, 10, 20 years ago for the anime hentai. Because that used to be all the tentacle porn. Mm-hmm. And that's all we would ever have. You know, Project H sends tons of books, but 99% of it are all relationship stuff. You know, it's basically a CW show that goes a couple steps further for a few pages. So it's nice getting something that's not disturbing and hurting my mind. The domestic hentai side for anime, it's pretty much dead, which is sad. But nobody licenses from Japan anymore. They refuse to do it for the most part.
You mean U.S. companies won't license it? Or
they're not allowed to license it. The Japanese companies won't do it for fear of legal issues.
Oh, okay.
Because they have gone so far down the dark path for like 99% of what they put out. You know, whereas the manga side, there's so much, well, not for here at least, where it's mostly clean in a way. Mm-hmm. For most of what they've done there for the anime side, it's all disturbing young characters and just horrible stuff.
Well, I mean, yeah, and I would imagine that is mostly due to the economics of the pornography industry, like, in general, I would imagine. If, you know, once your product is available for free all over the internet, and that is chiefly what people use the internet for, you've gotta, like, appeal to maybe niches that you personally don't want to appeal to, but that's the only way to start a business.
Sad but true.
Yeah,
sad. Yeah, especially, like I said, there's so much good hentai manga out there. You know, it's like so many of the regular manga that I've read over the years, except it just goes that extra mile. And some of these, you're like, why isn't that being made into an animated form? Because that would just be a lot of fun. I can't remember the name of that one that's coming out. There's like new OVAs for it over the years. There's like 50 volumes of the manga. It was almost like an instructional book on, you know, how to be a married couple.
Okay. Well, yeah, well, surprising that it's so popular in Japan, then. All right, Scotty415 asks, with the insane amounts of media you consume reviewing for Phantom Post, with anime, TV, and movies, how do you avoid getting major burnout?
Realistically, it's just the sheer variety. There's always something new. Anytime I get that question, that's what it comes down to. There's always, as soon as I finish one show, if it didn't work for me, there's something I'm going to like more that's coming up. Hmm. So it's hard to get burned out by because there's so much fun stuff. And since I'm not locked to like one genre or style, it keeps it really wide open to what I can get into. So it's hard to get burned out because of that.
I'm going to rephrase this, but Divine Nega basically asks, any genre out there that you'd like to see more of? Like,
For the anime side, I always look forward every year to when there's a boys' love show. Mm-hmm. Because there's maybe one or two at most. And they just tend to play so different from all the other shows. Not in terms of the romance itself, but just the fact that it focuses on different types of romantic relationships and actually gets into it. Because, you know, like I said, so many of the shows, if they have any relationship aspect, you know, it's, will they even admit they like each other? You know, it's that whole Sam and Diane from Cheers kind of thing.
Yeah.
The boys love stuff goes right into it, and they're like, we're here, I'm into you, we're together, we're doing these things.
Right.
So it's a nice, it's something that I wish they had more of across, you know, all different genders to do. But the boys love stuff is always fun, that I wish there was a couple more, or, you know, one or two more Yuri shows per year, just a little more variety.
I would imagine that as the Fujoshi market becomes more and more powerful in Japan, it's already really powerful over there, but as it gets even stronger, I would imagine you're probably going to see more of that stuff. Land of Obscusion asks, do you see Discotech's idea of using Blu-ray storage space to fit long SD quality anime series onto one disc being widely used?
No, but I'm glad that somebody's doing it. I know it's not a popular opinion, though. Some shows we just will never get HD because there's no source material for it or anything.
Right.
but having one that you can throw more bits at it to try and clean it up and make it look better, or to take, you know, a 10-disc show and put it on one disc,
right,
just storage space and ease of access to it all. So, I mean, it's not the most ideal situation. I know they're not going to do it a lot, but for some shows, I wish we had more of it.
Yeah, you know, if it's to the point where this is never going to look better than it does on the DVD you currently have, however, you have 50 DVDs of the show, and we put it on these two Blu-rays, yeah,
exactly.
Sure, just for shelf space purposes, you know, like...
Yeah. You know, it's just, and for the distributor, the, you know, how many SKUs do they have to go down to?
I know Justin has talked about this, and basically doing that does require you to sort of push what Blu-ray can actually handle in terms of capacity. But since it's SD video,
yeah,
not really noticing that much. let's see. So finally, from Red Train Claire, what are your thoughts on how the anime industry often tries to replicate success, yet doesn't always succeed? Even the common practice of appealing to multiple subgroups of fans has its limits and can be counterproductive.
I think it's just the problem of there's no singular audience in a way, because every show has to be individually marketed to deal with it.
Right.
You know, I don't want to keep going back to the well in a sense, but you know, you look at the comic side and they're not selling just a series. They're selling a series within a larger piece.
Mm-hmm.
So publishers have that advantage. With the anime side, you know, each show has to be its own huge push, and you want to reach as many people as possible. So, you know, you try to cross promote it in that way. It doesn't always work, but each one has its own challenges.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean,
both you and I've worked with enough marketing people to know, you know,
yep,
there's no silver bullet to get a show to everybody.
That's true. But in terms of replicating success, I mean, anime is one of the most risk-averse businesses,
yeah,
out there. I mean, they don't take a lot of risks because there's not a lot of money, and they have to be very careful in order to keep the lights on.
Yep.
It's kind of a miracle that we even get stuff like Space Dandy or whatever, where clearly this was a huge risk. And, you know, like... how did this get greenlit, you know, when it's,
yep,
it's absolutely not guaranteed to sell at all. And I believe that show isn't selling very well in Japan. So, you know, like,
and I don't know how well it's doing here on the ratings. I haven't paid too much attention.
It's a consistent winner on, on Toonami. It usually pulls in a million people.
So it's another one of those cases of it works great overseas, but sucks at home.
Well, that's why we got a second season of it.
Yeah.
It's because it does well here. But yeah, like, you know, when you get something that's experimental, cherish it, because it's a really risk-averse business. Like, it's one of the most commoditized entertainment businesses out there,
yep,
additionally. So they know their audience, they sell to that audience, and there's space on the fringes of that for other things. And if you're the type to look for those other things, then it's there for you. Miraculously, it is there for you. But it's not.
And you really got to support it too.
Yeah, you have to support it, and it's not going to be there ever in the same numbers that the safe stuff is going to be there. So you know that's it. And you know, copying what's popular, of course, a bunch of it's going to fall on its face. That happens with everything. You know, like I guarantee you, like in about maybe 3 or 4 years. Some of this comic book stuff is going to start to fail because they will have flooded the market for it. And,
yep,
you know, someone's going to decide that their cash cow is, we're going to start making Image Comics movies. It's like, yeah, good
mm-hmm.
luck. Good luck.
You know, that's not as bad as it might have been years ago.
Maybe. That's true. My perception of Image Comics is still from 1995, so...
Oh, we got to get you up to date then.
Are they making good stuff now?
Yeah, you know, go pick up Manhattan Projects, Sex Criminals, and Saga. You know, and remember, that's where Walking Dead comes from.
Oh, all right, well, I had no
East
idea
of West.
They were
respectable. You will love East of West.
Okay. I'll take a look. All right, man, well, that actually wraps us up. Thanks a lot for coming back. It was great to talk to you.
No problem, anytime.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Chris for stopping by, and eternal gratitude to all of you for listening and hanging in there for however many episodes you've been sticking around. But for those of you that have been here since the very beginning, I don't know how you did it, but thanks. Anyway, the theme song is Boot Girls. podcasts by the Random Media Division. You can check out randommedia.com. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating and review. We appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.